This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After a week in which in the Sky Bet Championship, after four consecutive defeats, Swansea City recorded two consecutive wins and Brentford ended a run of four consecutive draws by thrashing Preston North End. Both keep up the pressure on second-placed Watford. In Sky Bet League One, Oxford United scored 10 in two games to move back into playoff contention. And in Sky Bet League Two, Dale Vince, owner of spluttering playoff hopefuls Forest Green Rovers, said he'll break the mould and may consider appointing the EFL's first female manager in finding a replacement for the departed Mark Cooper. It's the official EFL podcast. In the Sky Bet Championship, then Norwich lead the way, played 41-90 points. Then Watford played 41-82 points. And then there's a 7-point gap to the playoff places where Bournemouth hopes that it might be a straight bounce back to the Premier League for all three of last season's relegated clubs have been boosted by four consecutive wins in April and five in a row in total. We can talk to their manager until the end of the season, Jonathan Woodgate. And mate, this still feels weird to have you there rather than having the Borough badge on your chest and things. It's still playing around with me head. Does it feel natural to you yet?
Yeah, it does now. Yeah, it does now. I've settled in fully, thoroughly enjoying my time at Bournemouth. When I first came in, it was difficult circumstance for myself. But I do have to say the fans and everyone associated with the club were absolutely fantastic with me.
Yeah, I mean, you really were thrown in at the deep end. So you come in as assistant and 48 hours later, you've got the gig. I mean, to go from one contrast to another, I mean, well, just tell us it from your point of view, will you? What happened?
Well, I got the call from Jason to come and help him and assist with the coaching and stuff, and another voice in the background, really. And I was up for it. I decided to bring my family down with me. And then we played the game against Sheffield Wednesday, lost 2-1, and he was sacked. Obviously, I couldn't believe it at that stage that was going to happen. And they rang me and said, "Will you be an interim manager for the time being until we assess our options?" And I was like, "Yeah, listen, I'll do what's right for the football club, and I'll help in any way I can." I was obviously shocked at the system, and you know, sometimes you need to be in the right place at the right time. Which I was. Sometimes you need to make your own luck by, you know, coming out of my comfort zone to Bournemouth, 6.5 hours away from home, go out your comfort zone, do something different, keep on learning, and then a bit of luck, I end up with the manager's job.
I can never get over the fact that in football you have to hit the ground running, you know, because I think in everyday life, let's say you're a head teacher at a school and you move from one post to another, they reckon the ramp up period is 6 to 9 months to be fully up to speed in your new role, even though it's very similar to your previous one. I mean, can you imagine if people in football were allowed that luxury? It just wouldn't happen in a million years.
You don't get that time. And I thought it was important as soon as I came in, you need to get wins on the board. And no matter how you get them wins, that's the most important thing. And then you can start implementing what you really want and you get a bit of time. But in this league, it's been difficult to find time. I think we've had two spare weeks where we've been able to do work with the players. And yeah, they listen to what we want and they're implementing what we want at the minute.
I mean, how do you get to know a new club as well in those circumstances? I mean, I assume you did a little bit of research in the week leading up to coming in as assistant, but then suddenly everything's your responsibility. People are looking to the leader, the most focal person, but you're still trying to sort of, I guess, find out where the local 7-Eleven is, and you're still trying to sort of find out who's who at the training ground, etc.
Put it this way, you've got to be good with names. And I think getting everyone's name right as soon as you go in the building, no matter who it is, from coaching staff to canteen staff to press officers, you know, you have to remember names and get to know people, have a smile on your face, talk to people and treat everyone exactly the same. It's not, for me, there's no two-tier system at a football club. Treat the players exactly the same as the chefs and so on and so forth. And that's the thing that I look to do as soon as you're walking in, and people can see you walking in with no ego and with humility. And you've always got a chance at a football club.
Have you always been like that Or was it something you learned as a result of sitting under some of the managers that you've played for in your own playing career as you went?
I think we've also like work with manager, but reading books as well. Like when you look at Alex Ferguson and what he did, he knew everyone in the every single person in the training ground, and I thought that was something I'd always try and take. I mean, and try and speak to people on a normal level, and don't treat people differently. And that's things you learn from different managers, even when you're reading books and when you're speaking to different managers and learning from different managers.
I mean, all this kind of begs the question, I probably should have asked you this when I interviewed you as you got the Middlesbrough job, but where were the sort of seeds of your interest in coaching born, and who were the sort of figures that inspired you to get into it?
I'd say my Middlesbrough days, really, the second period when you start getting older in your career and you realise what you think is what you're going to do when you finish, because you're a long time retired. And I wasn't one of them people who just wanted to sit round at home and do absolutely nothing. I'd rather come out and work and try and be a manager. I think it was the time when Tony Mowbray was coming in the iTalker anchor era as well. I thought Tony used to get me in his office regularly and talk about football sessions and different things that he'd seen, and he wanted my view on things. And that was a fantastic learning curve. Then I mean, when iTalk came in the building, things just seemed to ramp up a bit of how he wanted to train the organisation in a training session and how he put his training sessions on. But every manager has flaws, every manager's good, every manager has different scenarios that you do take with you, some good and some bad. So you learn from every single one of them.
Yeah, and we evolve as human beings, don't we? You know, that those that have got good soft skills, interpersonal skills, those that are technically good, and all those little pockets of influence become part of the mix that makes the Jonathan Woodgate that's sitting there talking to me right now.
Yeah, I think it's important that you keep on evolving as a coach and as a manager and as a person more than anything as well, you know. You can't just stand still. You've got to keep on learning. And no matter who you're speaking to, whether it be a person in the lift you've just met, you can always learn off someone, and you can always pick the brains of different people. And I always try and do that to learn different things in life in general, really, not just about football.
I mean, you were so passionate on your Middlesbrough appointment as a Borough lad. Just how painful was the exit? How did you get over it? What have you learned about yourself? What have you learned about management and coaching as a result of the experience?
It was a difficult time for me, losing my job at Middlesbrough. Ugh. I was devastated for a while. I remember driving home from the train ground and not remembering how I'm getting home. To be honest with you, I was on that much of autopilot thinking, oh my God, I've got my dream job and it's gone. What do I do now? And that's the thing, you sit back and you look back on things you got right, things that didn't go to plan, things you'd change, things you'd keep. And you just learn lessons, and you take them lessons all the way with you throughout your career. And like I said, this opportunity came along, right place at the right time at times. But yeah, I do have to say that I'm glad I had my family at that time, because it was a really tough period for me.
Yeah, it was them that kind of helped you find redemption. It was them that you were able to turn to. It was them that kind of pulled you out of whatever place you went into as a result of that experience.
Because yeah. Plus we're in lockdown as well, so you can't always see as many as you want to see as your friends, but your family are always there through thick and thin, and they're the ones who always help you. They were probably more worried than me, to be honest with you.
Well, having you stuck in the house all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what are you going to be doing now, getting under our feet? but it's a tough period, but you get through it, you learn, you're more wise, and you make better decisions.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we probably all know what the statistics are for first-time managers, that 50% of them don't return. Did you have any of those moments where you wondered what the future was going to hold for you? Or
yeah.
You did?
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I thought, well, I'm not stupid enough to know when the first one doesn't go to plan, it's difficult to get a second one. Really, really difficult. And I knew that, and I was willing to go a lot lower down the leagues to start again and prove myself. I was lucky enough to get a job at Middlesbrough at the time, a fantastic football club. But I was going to have to start again. Hence the reason why I came to do a coaching job with Bournemouth and Jason Tindall, to learn from them. And sometimes you've got to move down a peg or two, and then you never know what happens at the end of it. But it just shows, if like new managers going to a job, if it doesn't go well, don't give up. Don't give up. Keep on going. You might have your doubts, but deep down inside, you know that you'll get there sooner or later.
Yeah, well, you know, with the greatest respect to Jason, I mean, you're a pretty good indicator for anybody out there that's struggling at the moment as a result of what we've all been through for the last 14 months, as a result of maybe losing a business or losing a job, that we never know what's around the corner and how quickly fortunes can change as well, Woody.
Yeah, exactly. It can change. It can change at a phone call. It can change. You do the odd interview. You get in people's minds and that happens. And sometimes you've got to make your own luck as well. The harder you work, the luckier you get. I mean, like, for example, I've done a lot of work in lockdown on players for Middlesbrough. And in particular, I did a lot of work on Cameron Carter-Vickers. Loved him. I was recommending him to Middlesbrough the following season. And I get this job. Guess who's there? Yeah. Cameron Carter-Vickers.
It's weird, isn't it?
So I know all about him straight away. I know his character. I've done multiple character checks on him. I know how he plays. I know him inside out. So as soon as I got in, I went, as soon as I saw him on the first day, I went, you're playing Saturday. Because I knew every single thing about him. So by working hard on the other side of the game, on recruitment side of the game, it come back later on to help me in a big way.
I mean, are you're implying you're pretty sort of tech savvy, IT literate, you're putting a lot of hard hours in at a desk, sort of scrutinising, reading stats, looking at video, getting to grips with who people are?
I'd say I'm okay tech savvy, but I wouldn't say unbelievable.
His earphones have dropped out twice in the course of this interview, yeah, folks, but he's managed to get them back
too in. Big. That's my ears are too big. No, I'm okay. Listen, I've done some work for Liverpool for 8 months, didn't I, as a recruitment side. So I know that side of it. I know I can do whatever you want that way. I wouldn't say I'm unbelievable. I know my way around the computer. Our analyst guys will probably tell you different, but I'm not too bad.
Mate, is there anybody there that can go and stop that fella sawing or drilling or whatever's going on? Have you got somebody in the background sawing or drilling?
I don't know. It's a fella outside, yeah.
Could we just have 5 minutes just to...
Tony Pulis used to have that, you know. Do you know when he was on a pitch? Do you know at Hurwood?
Yeah.
Right? And if he heard the grounds were making noises as he was doing a coaching session, he used to go off his brains. Honestly, he'd stop it. He was like, oh. Or if a train went past, do you know, on the main line out in London, he'd do his brain.
Mate.
He hated any type of noise like that.
Control the controllables. I mean, he can control the groundsman that's in the pay of the club. Yeah. I'm not sure you can stop the 125 Aviva service.
But then sometimes in meetings, right, if he was doing a meeting, Ryan Shotton would sometimes squeeze a bottle. Do like a... and he'd be like, who's that? Who's that? He used to go absolutely berserk.
And it's gone. Mate, can we talk about the gulf between the Premier League and the Championship? And with the greatest respect to the players that you worked with at Middlesbrough, you have now got a squad of 15, 20, 25 million quid recruits down there. Is the gulf in quality, and this is probably backed up by the fact that Norwich and Watford are top at the moment, is it huge? Is it much, much bigger than we perceive it is?
Yeah, well, it's big this year. I think the league last year was a lot harder than this year, to be honest with you. I don't half, but like I say, I think with Watford and Norwich, they kept the majority of their players. I think we got rid of 11, but still had quality. The squad last year must have been huge for us because we got rid of, sold 11 and different players left. So our squad last year must have been out of this world, really. But it is a big gulf in class. It's like the jump from League One to the Championship as well. I think that's big. I think that's big for players coming in now. When you look at it, with Coventry struggling down there, Wickham, it's a tough jump each league because every league's just gaining money each year. But like when we played Southampton this year, Bournemouth, they were fantastic. They had some unbelievable players, and the beat was 3-0. So yeah, the gulf is big. It will start getting closer. It'll be closer next year with the likes of Watford and Norwich going up because they've already got a really good squad. So they'll just add to that. Yeah, it is a big gulf.
I mean, the thing I loved, there was a post-match interview when you were waxing lyrical about Jefferson Lerma, which sometimes is unusual because managers tend to want to keep the squad together and not create any stars. But I loved the honesty that you turned back into a fan at that point. You were just purring over the talent that you had at your disposal. Sometimes it gets you.
Yeah, Clem, I can't change who I am. And I'm not going to be something that I'm not. And it wouldn't be right if I was doing that. So if my player performs as I've seen on the pitch, and I think his performance is that good, I'll say it. I'll say how good he's been, and I'll tell him to his face how good he's been. But then, when he doesn't play well, he's got to take the criticism from me face to face, as well as the press. So it's two-way. I wouldn't criticise him in the press, but to his face, I'll criticise, and to his face, I'll praise. So they have to take both sides of the card.
The other one I want to talk about is Arnold Danjuma as well. I mean, what a talent Bournemouth have got on their hands there.
Yeah, he's an exceptional player. He's in a really good place at the minute, Arnie. He's another one who I've always done well. I've done a lot of work on his previous club, so I knew all about him coming into this role. I knew what type of player he was. I know last season that he didn't really get a run in the Premier League, and he maybe found it a bit difficult to get game time. But this season he's been outstanding. I can only talk of what he's done in under my reign, but at the minute he's playing some exceptional football, and what he else is doing is working for the team. Like, he made an unbelievable run for one of the goals. I showed him that, but then I showed him what he did winning the ball back when he had to sprint 50 yards and get the ball back. That's what makes a really good player for me, getting that work rate in, because we know with the ball at his feet, he's a top player. Can he do the rest going the other way? And he's starting to show that now. So, yeah, he's doing well.
Yeah, but that's the mark of a sort of fatherly hand around his shoulders as well, isn't it? That you can spot the brilliant, bristling talent, but also somebody gets hold of you and gets you to do the other side of the game, which is the difference between those that will flatter occasionally and those that will have a consistently long career at a very, very top level.
Yeah, and you can show them clips of whatever you like, and I like to show them clips of them of doing the dirty side of the game, because I know the good side's there. But if you keep on throwing so much mud, some of it sticks, and it's always a lesson. And when you see them learning and they're receptive to what you're saying, then it's even better. And then they go on a Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they do what you're saying to do. It becomes a whole lot better for you.
Let me just break off for a second, Woody, to say at the bottom of the Skybet Championship, despite taking 6 points from 9 in April, Wickham Wanderers still 9 adrift of safety with 5 games to play. Sheffield Wednesday's defeat at Swansea City was their 10th in 13th matches, and Rotherham started their COVID catch-up run of 4 games in 8 days with a win over QPR. And in fact, at the time of recording this week's official EFL podcast, Rotherham play Coventry in their next game. And then, of course, all the fixtures this coming weekend, anything that was scheduled for 3 o'clock has been moved so as not to clash with the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh. Friday night, Reading, 1 win in 6 and 5 points off the playoffs now, entertain Cardiff City. And then 12:30 Saturday lunchtime, Brentford entertain Millwall. Watford travel to Luton. It's Swansea against Wickham. In the evening, there's a certain matter of Norwich against Bournemouth, and then on Sunday, Rotherham in action again against one of those teams that are just above them, Birmingham City, and Coventry entertain Barnsley. And another fixture just to note before next, we're with you next Tuesday night, will be Norwich against Watford, the top two going head to head. From here on in, and you've had a really good run, 29 points from the 42 you could have got in charge. Is it all about timing and all about momentum now?
Yeah, you've got to keep the momentum going. I mean, that's been 5 wins on the spin now. But we need that consistency. It's important that we don't get complacent, and I won't let complacency creep in with this team. I get more nervous when we're playing against maybe the lesser teams in the league who are more low down. When we've got to play Norwich or a Watford, I'm absolutely fine, because I know the players will be absolutely bang up for it, the big games and the big game players. We know what it's going to be like at Norwich. They're a good team and deservedly at the top of the table. They've had a fantastic season. And what I do like about Norwich is they've kept with the manager. He got promoted. Okay, they went back down with him, but they stuck with their structure. And now he's doing the same again, getting promoted. So the fair play to that football club, who the people making decisions behind the scenes have done a really good job.
Listen, I know the club's, but this is Bournemouth's aspirations were to take one of the automatic promotion places. But in a funny sort of way, is it beneficial that you've probably dropped off that at the point that you did, that and the blip is out of the way now, and psychologically in all your heads you can get used to the fact you're going to be having to need another 3 weeks to the season and go through another three games, etc., etc., as opposed to if you're in contention right at the end and you miss out in the last game of the season, there's a bit of a psychological adjustment to be made there, Woody?
Yeah. Well, you saw what happened last season with Notts Forest when they were in the playoff positions all the way and got pipped on the last day by Swansea on goal difference. And it is a massive effect. We're coming at the right time. You know, we slipped out of them at one point. At one point, we're in 5 points behind Reading and 5 points behind Barnsley. Now we've swept that to five ahead of them. So it's been a really good run. We have got momentum. We need to keep on going. Like I keep on saying to the player, I'll drill it into him every day. You have done nothing yet. You've only won five games. You should have done that throughout the season, winning four games in five. They only won three games in a row. I think it was once a season, isn't it? Once a season for a team of Bournemouth's calibre. That doesn't sit right with me because they've got some exceptional players. So is it a mentality thing? Is it an attitude? Is it an application thing? They're showing now that the attitude, the application, the mentality is 100%. And that's how it has to be for the rest of the season. You can't take your foot off the gas. You've got to be 100% for every single game, especially in this league. This league can come and bite you. It's a tough league, isn't it? And if you don't show up on a day, you'll get turned over.
What does the future hold for you? You mentioned the family were down with you. I mean, are you just sweeping that to one side for the time being, or have there been any conversations behind the scenes?
No, they've been down with me, but when my son and daughter went back to school, they went back up
they've
north.
They've gone back up.
Yeah.
But in terms of your future with Bournemouth, have there been any conversations about what might happen going into the summer? Or
nah, I mean, it's the end of the season. That's all I'm concentrating on, Clem. End of the season. And let's see what happens. I'm happy. I'm doing an okay job at the minute. Can be better. Can improve. But that's me. That's where I'm at. And I'll just keep on doing what I can do with the football club and try and get them as high as I can and hopefully into the playoffs.
And just goes to show what life can bring, doesn't it? You know, this point of last season, the despair you found yourself in this time around, you know, you must be feeling pretty good about yourself.
I just feel good that I didn't give up and I kept on going. And, you know, you need someone to give the opportunity as well, by the way. So you can look at it as well. And do you know what? If you're not a good person, you're not a good human being, you're going to struggle to get back in. But when people do reference checks and speak to different people, they realise what type of character you are. So that always goes for you as well. If you're a good person, you'll always try and get somewhere. And, you know, luckily enough, it did for me.
Great to talk to you.
Cheers, Clem.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
In Sky Bet League One, after briefly rising into the top two on Good Friday while recording the ninth win of their 12-match unbeaten run, Sunderland have now lost two in a row and are 5 points off the automatic promotion places. Their second defeat was at the hands of Wigan Athletic. Consecutive wins for them and for AFC Wimbledon take them both out of the bottom four. Rochdale remain bottom despite beating Swindon Town to record their first home win since October. Your fixtures this coming weekend. Friday night, second place Peterborough entertain Northampton, and then 12:30 kickoffs. It is Blackpool, currently fifth, unbeaten in the last 15 matches, who entertain Sunderland. Lincoln City, who are back up to fourth despite winning only their second match in 11, they travel to Bristol Rovers. It's Charlton against Ipswich, two of the teams just outside the playoffs at the moment. Leaders Hull entertain Fleetwood. Portsmouth travel to MK Dons, and a big game at the bottom, Wimbledon against Swindon is a 5:30 kickoff, as is Oxford United against Gillingham. And in Sky Bet League 2, for the second week in a row, after Nigel Adkins on our last episode, we can talk to one of our official EFL podcast pundits who is back in the game. During his previous 5-year spell at Southend United, Phil Brown led them to promotion from League 2 after replacing Mark Molesley last week. He was given 6 games to try and keep the club, who were 6 points from safety as he took over, in the division. You've spent too long with Sam Allardyce, Brownie. That's what it is. You just love a challenge too much. It must be written in your DNA now.
Clem, I've always liked the challenge. I think every game of football is a challenge. I think every club that you manage is a challenge, and in different circumstances for sure. And these circumstances, I think myself and Sam, our DNA was survival campaign at Bolton Wanderers, at Blackpool to start off with, but then Bolton Wanderers. But then became a successful campaign at Bolton Wanderers, not just survival. It became a European challenge, which is great when you've got the time to plan for that. But, you know, at this moment in time, I don't think either of us have, you know, time to plan. But Sam's had a little bit more time at West Bromwich Albion than I've had at Southend. But with six games to go, I looked at it. You know, the chairman, with all due respect to him, he offered me a three-year deal. I didn't think it was appropriate to go in there and paint the picture that I'm safe, I'm okay, I've got 3 years, to a group of players that I'm going to try and demand and get everything out of by sitting there saying I'm safe. I wanted to be in the mire with them. So I decided to say no, I'll take the six games. I still think there's enough points. I think there's enough character in the team from what I've seen so far, but I certainly think there's enough points to get us out of the trouble that we're in. But yeah, the draw against Crawley Town was a mixed bag for me. You know, it's synonymous of football, I think, in the lower divisions. It's lost its identity to a certain extent. And what I mean by that is I don't just mean, you know, the lower divisions should be blood and thunder and no ability. Far from it. I think they should be coupled by the two. And I think the under-23s, from a Premier League standing, has certainly played its part in the lower leagues and the improvement of the technique. But that gritty determination has to be on show in the lower divisions, which I witnessed last night at Barrow when they turned over Exeter, who's a very technical team. So looking at the challenge, it's not just to win games of football. It's to get my opinion, my views, my philosophy, if you like, across to a group of players who are not used to it. I was very fortunate to walk into a changing room that probably has got four or five lads in from the previous regime, from my time, and they're still there. You know, the likes of Jason Demetriou and John White and Elvis and Mark Oxley and people like that. But people who I've locked horns with as well in the Football League. You know, Alan McCormack, I've had many, many a scrap with him, and I'm glad I'm on the same side as him now, if I can get him out there on the field of play. And the same applies to Ricky Holmes. You know, Ricky Holmes terrorised my fullbacks in many, many occasions, but now it's my responsibility to get him to terrorise the opposition's fullbacks. So there's a lot of things to look forward to, but there's some little challenges and big challenges along the way.
I look at your time previously with the club, and obviously you had the promotion, and then you nearly made the playoffs in League One as well before things drifted ever so slightly. No thought of legacy, no thought of being at the helm if something at the other end of the scale happened? Is it pure unbridled, let's try and help a club that I love to stay in the EFL? That overrides everything.
And I think all your mentors, all your peers, the people above you, always say don't go backwards. Don't go backwards in terms of your career. I understand that, but don't go back to another club. And I don't quite subscribe to that. You know, I think part of my DNA is the love and the passion for the game, but the love and the passion for the clubs that I work with. And that includes Derby County. That includes Preston North End. Very short space of time. Done podcasts for them in this horrendous time, you know, that we're having, you know, the pandemic, lockdown and whatever. But every time I speak to supporters and every time I talk to people at clubs where I didn't have as long, and I've mentioned two there, I've still got an affinity with them. I'd still love to be able to help in some way if they were in trouble. But, you know, the clubs that I have had time with, Bolton Wanderers and, you know, Halifax Town, if you want to take it all the way back, you know, but Bolton Wanderers in terms of management and Hull City, as we well know, and Southend United. And even Swindon, you know, 9-10 months with Lee Power at Swindon Town. I would willingly go back there. You know, a lot of people might be saying, no, that's not the course of action. You know, you didn't really spend enough time there to get any kind of relationship. But I always think you do. Once you've got your feet under under the table, the whole scenario really gets to you. And I had no qualms whatsoever about going back to Southend to help a chairman who was in trouble. You know, he let me go 3 years or 2 years, 3 years ago, whatever it was. And he's replaced me with three managers, maybe even four. And at the moment, I've got a sort of mishmash of all three or four managers in that changing room. But as I say, I'm lucky that the fact that there's still three or four of my players from my time at the football club who I can get across to very, very quickly, and hopefully they'll spread the word.
What a contrast to India. And I never, I never quite knew with you, because on the one hand, I think you probably mentioned it when you came on the podcast earlier in the season, and certainly in private chats, about how much you love being immersed in another culture and all that kind of stuff. But I've always felt in the background was that urge, that desire to get back on the English stage. Would I be right?
Yeah, you're right. I wanted to, at any stage of my career, whether it be playing, coaching or management, to sample a foreign climate, a foreign changing room, a challenge in terms of not just the culture, the language, everything, all them barriers, to break them down. I think that's the big test for a man, for a person, for a coach, for a leader, for a teacher. All of them things that when you're standing in front of a group of players, you're trying to get your views across, simple views on football, and they're the great challenges. But I always had an eye on the English game. Never ever took my eye off the Premier League. I don't think anybody can, doesn't matter how far you travel in this world. You know, you can go as far as Australia, everybody's talking about the English Premier League, but you've also got the envy, the jealousy of the world that we have five tiers of English football, and everybody wants to be involved in that. And, you know, whatever level you come in at, and I've been very fortunate in my managerial career to being involved in every level, which I can actually proudly say to anybody that, you know, Championship, Premier League, First and Second Division, you know, the great challenges, and I'm not bothered about what people think about me. Am I a Second Division manager? Am I a Premier League manager? I'm not bothered about that. I want to be that manager that's remembered for having a legacy, having an imprint on the game itself, and having a style of playing football.
You see, a lot of people's ego wouldn't allow them to do what you did after Hull City, taking up the Premier League, enjoying that experience. A lot of people would see it dropping down as a sort of a fringe to the person that they are. But you just don't seem to be built like that at all.
I'm not built like that, Clem. I'm immersed in the game. The game itself is the important part for me. I've seen changes over the 40-odd years that I've been involved, for sure. You know, going back to my time as an apprentice electrician, walking into that changing room at Hartlepool United and see the likes of, you know, Bob Newton, Bobby Kerr, John Bird. I was brushing shoulders with, in my opinion, greats at that level and even higher. You know, John Bird played for Newcastle in the Premier League or in the First Division, as it was known then. Bobby Kerr lifted the FA Cup for Sunderland. Being in that changing room and listening and rubbing shoulders with them and learning from them, and then being still in the game 40-odd years later, it doesn't matter what changing room you're walking into, you're full of character, you're full of, you know, you want to express yourself, you want to give what you've taken and got from the game, and you want to give it to the kids. I mean, there's young kids in my changing room now who haven't got a clue what I am, who I am, and I'm not bothered about that. I just want them to remember me when I'm gone.
I love the absence of ego about talking to you. You mentioned electrics. You did have to keep your hand in the last time you were at Southend United. Did you come back, and was the first thing, once you checked the first team squad and been through a training, do you have a little look at the sort of the connections board and just make sure nothing was about to burn out?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, whenever you walk into a manager's office that's just being cleared out, and it's empty, it's vacant. It's like going into an empty flat and you're moving in there and you've got to change everything, the light bulbs, the lampshades, everything's off the wall, the fixtures, the fittings. And that's what it's like. It's like a blank sheet of paper. It's like a blank canvas, and you're there to paint the picture again. And I can remember, I can see the imprints and the footprints of when I was there, because for 5 years, to turn a training ground, what used to be a nightclub, to turn it into a training ground, and it's still existing as a training ground and still functional. I was quite proud of some of the stuff that is still there. And now, I don't know, after 6 games, maybe, who knows, sign a longer contract and have another imprint on it. I don't know. Let's see what the next 5 games bring. I mean, we've got our draw, we've got our first clean sheet, we've got our first point and something to build on. So let's see what the next 5 games bring, Clem.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, a 12th win in 15 matches, the most recent at Salford City, means Bolton Wanderers are now 4 points clear of fourth and 2 off the top. After his first 13 games failed to produce a win, the Walsall manager Brian Dutton picked up maximum points twice in the last week. And as Phil was mentioning, Barrow, he's been to see them this week as they beat Exeter. Their recent surge has now taken them 9 points clear of the bottom two in their first EFL season for 48 years. Your fixtures this coming weekend: the leaders Cheltenham head to Crawley on Friday night, and then 12:30 kickoffs on Saturday. Phil's Southend travel to Exeter, as he's already mentioned. It's Forest Green Rovers entertain Scunthorpe. Bolton travel to Grimsby. Morecambe are at home to Oldham. Newport against Cambridge is sixth against second. Tranmere entertain Salford. And there's a 5:30 kickoff that Phil might be quite interested in, because Colchester kick off at that time against Walsall. One win in 25 for Colchester, who, Philip Brown, you play next Tuesday night.
It's an amazing game, honestly, Clem. You built it up absolutely fantastic there. We've got our job on Saturday at 12:30 is to put a marker down. Our job is to let Colchester think that we're on the way, we're on the march, and we can only do that by gaining points. And then they go into their game at 5:30. Whatever that happens, I'll be watching it very, very closely. But that came on Tuesday, and it being a sort of a derby match as well, you know, it's very, very close. And I know the owner fairly well. I know the people who played for the club fairly well. They've been trying desperately to build a club from within and go beyond. Looks like they've extended themselves, maybe overextended themselves, I don't know, but I don't want to talk too much about Colchester because they've got their own problems. But if we can manage to put that marker down at St James's Park on Saturday morning, well, it's 12:30. I know you're listening to me and saying St James's Park. You know the Geordie in me, don't you?
Of course, mate. And that's why I laughed.
And if we can put a marker down to the rest of the division, not let alone Colchester, to Grimsby, to Walsall, to even Barrow, who gave a great account of themselves last night, then that's our job.
Do you, in these circumstances, scrutinise the fixtures? Do you go through, they've got to play them, oh, that's going to be a tough day there, you know, because it could come down to kitchen sink time, the last couple of rounds of fixture, where it probably will do next week for you, actually, Phil, won't it? There'll probably be a point in that game where you think, this is our chance, we have to go for it.
Well, I think if you analyse just the conversations I had with Ron Martin, it was quite simple how he saw it, and he was looking at six games, and I kept on saying, bring it back, bring it back. You've got to think in the now. You've got to think now. And that was Crawley Town on Saturday, and that was that first point, that first clean sheet, that first sample of what I was taking on, you know, the challenge of a new changing room. It's not a new football club. It's an old one to me, but it's a brand new changing room with young players in there that haven't sampled this kind of thing. And I had to paint a picture of 1906, the history of the club, never been out of the Football League. And now we're facing oblivion if we do go down, never been out of the Football League in over 100 years. So it's the big, big challenge. They've got to see the bigger picture before they see that smaller picture, which is quite simply win a game of football. But they give their all on Saturday. I've got to say it, Clem. They were really going through the mill for me. And I can only thank them for that, but I want them to go through the mill and bring that quality at the same time. And if we can do both, then we'll give most teams that we're going to play a run for their money.
Yeah, great to have you back, mate. I mean, and lovely to see you cutting a dash and entering the sartorial ranks of managers with the nice blue suit, good, nice and crisp, nice jacket over the top, little kind of, well, what was it again? Was it a scarf? Was it a cravat? What was it? What was it, mate?
It was a little bit of a mixture, to tell you the truth. It was out there for everybody to just have a little guess at. I knew Rob McCaffrey was coming to the game, and you know Rob very well. I go back years with Rob, and he was coming down to the game. I thought I'd put something on for him. And the next time I see you, Clem, I'll put something on for you as well.
Oh, splendid. I can't wait. Make sure it's silk with a little rub of paisley in there. Phil, a pleasure as always.
Top man, thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Phil Brown and to Jonathan Woodgate. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.